It is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you our keynote speaker, Dr. Anita Sadati. Dr. Sadati really overlaps the worlds of traditional medicine. She's an Ivy League trained OBGYN who was in a practice for a very long time, who then did additional training in functional medicine. So we thought we'd bring her in today to speak with you so you can see where the overlap is and what used to be called alternative or complementary is now all medicine and healthcare. I always think of it actually as expanded traditional medicine and healthcare. So without further ado, Dr. Sadati.
Thank you, Stacy. I'm so happy to be here. It's amazing to see so many people interested in looking at all of the additional healing modalities that we have present in our community today. And I love that Northwell, which is this amazing, powerful, large healthcare system, is acknowledging and really incorporating all of these ancient traditions of healing into their own medical system. So that is unbelievable, and I think it bodes well for medical care in general. What I wanted to talk about today is a little bit about how I got into functional medicine and where I think functional medicine has a role in our healthcare today. I also want to talk a little bit about how I work through patients. We're going to go through some case examples so you guys get a sense of how a functional medicine evaluation or consultation can be a little bit different than a typical allopathic medical approach. So my shift in functional medicine was a very gradual one. After I finished medical school and did my residency training, I joined a very busy obstetrical practice here in Great Neck, and I was trained at Northwell, and I practiced obstetrics at Northwell for the past 20 years. So among four doctors, we were doing over 900 deliveries a year. And when we were in the office, I was seeing about 40 patients a day. When you're younger, you know, you get younger patients. You're the new kid on the block. And I miss the days when my patients would look at me and be like, are you 12? Like what, you know, how are you here? You know, so I miss those days. That stopped quite a while ago. But when you're younger, you don't necessarily have the complicated hormonal patients. But as you get older, I think within my 10th year of practice, I started realizing that what I had in my toolbox wasn't really necessarily working for my patients anymore. And certainly if they wanted something beyond what I was trained with, I was coming up a little bit empty. So that shift in trying to figure out new modalities and new options for my patients for treatment also overlapped with a little bit of a personal situation. Around 10 years into my practice, I started having some health issues of my own. And it's funny because this week I was just reading an article that was published in JAMA about the concerning increased rate of physician burnout. And if you see when they talk about burnout, the definition is exhaustion, feeling overwhelmed, cynical, detached from your job, which means feeling a detachment from your patients, and lacking a sense of personal accomplishment. OBGYN had a rate of about 45%, and that was by no means the top of the list. So that, I think, you know, now in retrospect, that was definitely what I was feeling. So there was sort of a culmination of feeling stressed, overworked, frustrated, and then not feeling well. So I searched within my medical community for help. And I, of course, as a physician here, I had access to the best doctors, the best testing. I was very well taken care of. And fortunately, through the process of being evaluated, I was told, you know, there's nothing physically wrong with you. I love those words, right? You know, so you're just crazy. after, at least, you know, that's good enough to know that, you know, there's nothing horrible going on with you, but you're sort of left with symptoms and issues that don't feel so great. And so I was given a lot of different medications and things to try to help my symptoms. And I was, of course, one of those people that anything you gave me had the exact opposite reaction. Like, everything. This was supposed to calm you down, I was jacked up. This is supposed to make you not vomit, I was throwing up. Like whatever was the opposite. So I started a search on my own for looking for alternatives to help navigate through these symptoms that were really impacting my health and my work and my family life. I found through, for a variety of reasons, I actually want to thank, I don't know if Lisa Bondi is still in the room. Is she here? Okay. I have to thank you, Lisa, because when I was pregnant with my last child, who's going to be 13, I did a 200-hour yoga teaching certification, and that's with Lisa. And that's really what opened my eyes to other healing practices. Thank you. So thank you, Lisa. So I found functional medicine, and I started using some of the principles of functional medicine for my own health. And lo and behold, I was feeling better. So I started thinking, well, if I'm feeling better, well, maybe this may be something great for my patients. So I started integrating it a little bit into my own care of patients, and I was starting to see that it was really transforming health on a daily basis. It was almost like witchcraft. Like, I was like, really? This helped you? This changing your diet helped? Oh, okay. So I kind of started going further. I think that functional medicine has a place in our healthcare because right now the biggest burden in our healthcare in our nation and in the world is regarding chronic disease. It's the biggest growing epidemic. And I think that our medical model is based more on very discrete, acute, emergent care type systems. It's not necessarily looking at what causes chronic disease. A hospital is not meant to deal with what happens outside of the hospital. So we have to start looking at chronic disease and how we can change the course of it in different ways. And that's where I think functional medicine can be very helpful. These are numbers. 50% of Americans have one chronic disease. A quarter of patients have two or more. We spend more money on treating type 2 diabetes in 1 year than could probably help cure world hunger. That's a lot of money. Heart attacks, we'll just scroll through this. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men have an autoimmune disease, and when you have one, you're at risk for more. Autoimmune disease is things like MS, multiple sclerosis, ALS, rheumatoid arthritis, type 1 diabetes, celiac disease, Crohn's, inflammatory bowel disease. There's so many autoimmune diseases because our immune system is so overreacted and overexcited with the kinds of environmental toxins and chemicals and stimulations that we're getting that it no longer can figure out what's self and what's foreign. Then we have autism, which to me is really frightening. I saw a pretty significant climb in autism rates in my patients when they were having children. And I have so many friends with children who have autism, and there's no clear path as to why this is happening, but there's clearly something happening that's messing with our genetics and the genetics of our children. Depression rates keep going up. 9 in 10 of us are taking some sort of a medication on a regular basis, whether it's over the counter or prescription. That's a lot of medication going on to treat symptoms. And for the first time in modern history, our lifespan is actually decreasing. So what went wrong? Wow. I know, it's so subtle. So we're moving in the wrong direction, and this is basically related to the inability for our body and our genetics to keep up with the changes in the modern world. So humans were designed to live more like this. This is that hunter-gatherer out in nature. I mean, these are very lean, fit, free of chronic disease people. I mean, maybe not the best wardrobe choices, but still. They were healthy, and then a lot of people will say, well, yeah, but they were dying when they were 30, right? Well, yeah, they were dying. They were dying from things like infections or traumas or lack of critical care for injury. That's the kind of thing, not from chronic disease, not from dementia, not from depression, not from suicide. What happened was that our modern lifestyle basically outpaced our ability to deal with our We have basically not been able to keep pace with the changes in our environment. So two things that were kind of critical in this change. One is a shift to a more agricultural, grain-based food implementation in our country, and the second is the Industrial Revolution. So the shift in our civilization from hunter-gatherer lifestyle to industrialized society where we have a lot of modern conveniences and we have a lot of indoor dwelling, but that's replaced our engagement with our environment and nature in every way possible. And that's really why we suffer from chronic disease. So it's not the genes. Our genes are the same. Genetics are supposed to be, you know, sort of the key to health. It's the same. What's changed is our environment. Let's talk about our environment. This slide basically demonstrates what the underlying philosophy is for functional medicine and what disease is about. The exposome refers to the primary driver of disease or health. These are all of our cumulative exposures, environmental and lifestyle, that are responsible for either causing health or disease. So it's this combination of pressures on our genetics that affect what the expression of our genetics will be, which genes are turned on, which genes are turned off. When I talk about functional medicine, I'm really focusing on what is the exposome of my patients and how is that impacting their genetics. So we see that when we work from the inside out, we have the exposures with the genes. We have pathology that begins, so that's the beginning of physiologic changes. And then we have disease and symptoms, or syndromes, and then we get symptoms. So there's a long time between when things go wrong internally to when we actually experience a symptom. So what's my focus in functional medicine? These are the four foundations of health, and I try to rename them something sexier, okay? Because if you say to somebody, let's talk about your diet, immediately it's like narcolepsy. Like you fall asleep, I'm not interested, I have no desire to change what's going on with my diet. I mean, diet is such a loaded term. So I've switched it to say, okay, let's talk about how you're nourishing your body, because that's what it's about. So functional medicine, the primary foundation, the foundational principle is that food is medicine. So how are you nourishing yourself? That's what I want to talk about. And then movement. So movement is much bigger than just exercise. Exercise, we tend to think about it as this very discrete time in the day where we run like lunatics on a treadmill, and then we sit for 14 hours for the rest of the day, right? So that's not movement. Movement is, do we park our car a block away from our destination? Do we use the stairs? Are we moving up and down at least once an hour? Like, what are we doing with the rest of our movement for the day? That's what I'm more interested in, not what kickbox, cardio, boot camp, whatever, you know, you did for a small segment of your life. Oh, and sorry, and then relax. So what are your stressors? This is a big one. This is honestly probably one of the biggest things that we uncover. And when we go over the cases, you'll see how this can impact your disease development. And then finally, instead of saying sleep, which again, boring topic, don't want to hear about it, how do we restore? Because all of your hormones, all of your detoxification, everything that's good about healing happens in sleep. And we minimally need 8 hours. So if you're doing 6 hours and you're complaining of fatigue, I just have no energy. I am so tired. Well, how much sleep are you getting? Well, I go to bed at midnight, 1 o'clock. It's not great sleep. And then I wake up at 6. Okay, well, maybe that's an area that we need to talk about. Because if you're getting less than 8 hours of sleep a night, you're increasing your risk for heart attacks and breast cancer and dementia. So perhaps sleep would be something to consider. So our problem is modern diet, modern exercise. We don't need sleep. I can go without sleep. That's no problem. Our work stress and life balance. And even when we're on vacation, what are we doing? Like, you know. And finally, significant social isolation. And this is a big component. I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar with all the studies that show that people that feel socially isolated have much higher risk of morbidity and mortality, all causes. And I think that unfortunately, the interaction with social media is making this even worse. So what's the answer? There are a lot of different answers to this, but I'm going to discuss what I think is a beneficial approach. So when we talk about a drug-only model, and you know, in our society, we're very big on what's the easiest thing, a pill for an ill, how can I just get going on with my day without changing anything? So that's where the drug alone model comes in, where if you have a symptom, we treat you with a medication. But drugs alone are not going to address the real problem. So if I'm taking a migraine medication, but my problem is I'm intolerant to eggs, and that's what's causing my migraine, then eating eggs all day long is not going to help. But how do I know that that's my problem? How do I know what my trigger is? The second thing is that drugs don't just suppress one thing. When you take an antihistamine for an allergy, it has all kinds of changes in our cognitive ability. So they have done studies on patients who have been on antihistamines, and they put them on a road test, and they perform as well as somebody who's above the blood alcohol level. So it's not just a side effect. It's an effect, but it's an effect we don't like or we don't want. But that's the downside of not figuring out what your trigger is or what your underlying cause is. Okay, so we talked about my four things. This is functional medicine. So functional medicine is a root cause approach. What is the trigger? What is the underlying problem for you guys? Let's not put a Band-Aid of a medication on it. Let's find out why you have these problems. This is another way I like to put it. Like, let's say that you guys had a rock in your shoe. So is the answer, let's take some Tylenol for the pain? Let's rub some essential oils on it? No, I mean, these are not things that are going to work. Let's take the stone out, and then we can allow things like a Tylenol or our oils or a meditation to do something about it. First, get rid of the cause. That's the one thing you guys need to take home about functional medicine. It's all about the cause. The second thing is that I've become sort of a mini expert in a lot of different medical disciplines because I'm not dividing people into their organs. So you're not just your stomach, you're not just your brain, you're not just your ovaries, you're not just your adrenal, you're not just your brain. All of these things interact together. So we're not really compartmentalizing your systems. We're looking at how everything interacts together. And then finally, it's very personalized. So what I'm going to tell one patient for her migraines is different than I'm going to tell another patient for their migraines because their causes are totally different. There's no one answer, one supplement, one diet, one exercise plan. No, it's very different for each person. And then, of course, when we talk about this, we're looking at prevention. So let's not wait for, what's that saying, the horse to get out of the barn or close the door after, you know what I mean, like whatever. Let's do something before the horse escapes, if that's even a saying. And what I like is that as a physician trained in allopathic medicine, I get to use the best of both worlds. I get to use medications when I want. I get to use supplements when I want. I know lifestyle changes. I get the whole package. It's so helpful because I don't have to limit myself to one thing. So I want to use this as a little bit of an example of how stress can impact so many of our symptoms. So I want you guys know about fight or flight, right? So the sympathetic nervous system is all about fight, flight, adrenaline. That's sympathetic. Parasympathetic is about relaxation, digestion, reproduction, rest. That's the other side. We're all very much in fight or flight all the time. Spilled my coffee on my shirt, have to get dressed, late for work, stuck in traffic, my son's annoying, like whatever. It's a lot of stressors, right? We're all sympathetic. We learn today all the things that move us in parasympathetic. That's what acupuncture is, that's what yoga is, that's what meditation is. These are all parasympathetic activities. We need so much of that. This is an idea of how we get chronic disease as a result of sympathetic overdrive. What's anxiety? So sympathetic is my heart rate goes up, my breathing goes up, I feel my heart beating out of my chest. That's anxiety. That's a sympathetic symptom. Muscles contract. So when you are going to be chased by a lion, are you like this? Or are you like this? Right? So if we're like this all day, where do you think that chronic neck pain is and back pain is going to come from? Digestion slows. How many people are constipated? Everybody in my office is constipated. Like, everybody. I feel like there's something wrong with me. I'm not constipated. So digestion slows because when you are running after, running for the hunt or whatever it is, you're not going to be pooping. I mean, you're going to be hopefully holding it in and get away from the lion. Maybe that's what's going on. Immune system. So when you are in a fight or flight, your immune system has to be overactive. What if I get injured? What if I get cut? What if I have blood loss? My immune system is ready to go. But what does that mean? Our brain doesn't distinguish between a lion and traffic, or a lion and a parking ticket, or a lion and a deadline at work. It doesn't know the difference. It thinks it's being chased by a lion. So as a result, when your immune system is up, what happens? Autoimmune disease. And then finally, insulin resistance. When you're under a lot of stress, this is where we get prediabetes, hypoglycemia, real diabetes. Why? Because when you need to be ready to go, when your muscles need to go, you need to access sugar. We have 5 hormonal mechanisms in our body to mobilize sugar. We have 1 to get rid of it, insulin. So how important is it for us to be able to mobilize sugar? If we have 5 overlapping physiologic mechanisms, that's a lot, right? When we're mobilizing energy, we have sugar in our bloodstream all the time. That's how we get insulin resistance. And then finally, we're not sleeping. Well, why? Because if I'm getting chased by a lion, I'm not going to sleep. No, I'm going to be awake. So this is how stress drives a lot of the symptoms that people don't have answers to. Now, a lot of people think that integrative medicine and functional medicine is all about, you know, okay, I'm going to use bioidentical hormones for my female stuff, right? That's not what it's about. It's actually about this third column. We're going to look to reestablish the normal communication between the brain and your hormones. We're going to look to support your own body's ability to make hormones. We're going to identify why you have hormone imbalance. I promise you there's not one woman with hot flashes who has broken ovaries. That's not your problem. Your problem is not a lack of hormones, because there are a lot of women who have intact adrenal hormone systems who can glide through menopause without suffering. Why? Because their stress hormones are in balance. That's all there is to it. Let's do the cases. This is the fun part. So this is what I do in my office. So I have a patient who came. She's 53 years old. I'm fat, I'm tired, and I can't sleep. This is everybody who comes into my office, by the way. Not you. Her medical history is she has high cholesterol. Here's my take on cholesterol. As soon as you hit menopause, your cholesterol goes up. Why? Because cholesterol is the building block for hormones. What have you stopped making? Hormones. Your body's trying to do something about it. Prediabetes. Okay, so this already, she's, in my mind, okay, she's already sugar insulin imbalanced. This means her adrenals are not right. This means her adrenaline is up. I already know what's happening with her. Osteopenia, what is that? A lack of bone, right? Osteopenia is not a calcium deficiency. Osteopenia is inflammation. Okay, I'm going to give you guys a tiny bit of science here. There's a immune cell that's called a macrophage. Have you guys heard of this? Macrophages? They are there to attack foreign things. Osteoclasts are the type of cells that chew up bone in order to make them better. You need to remodel the old stuff to make new stuff. Osteoclasts and macrophages are sisters. So when your inflammation is up and your immune system's up, your osteoclastic activity is up. Calcium doesn't help that. Taming your inflammation and your stress hormones do. Finally, what does she have? Reflux and IBS. Well, that's everybody. So what do I think about that? All right, so she's got crappy bacteria. She might have some sort of infection that nobody's detected. She probably has food intolerances. She may have digestive enzyme insufficiency. She's not absorbing her vitamins. That's a cause of inflammation. So this is how I'm thinking about this patient. What are her medications? Okay, so Lipitor for the cholesterol. That's, I think, probably just related to the fact that she's menopausal. Metformin, this helps to lower blood sugar. This is something that sensitizes your body to insulin. I happen to like this medication. However, it's not getting to why she has the sugar and insulin problem, is it? It's just treating the symptom. The second thing about metformin and Lipitor is that they are both eating up important nutrients. CoQ10. So what are you? You're tired? Muscle fatigue? CoQ10. Lipitor reduces that. How about metformin? Well, that's going to deplete you of your B12 and your B6 and your magnesium. How good does that feel? It doesn't. Then we have a baby aspirin, which if you guys have been reading the news, all of a sudden this is not necessarily the way to go for everybody. And she's on Prilosec, which is an acid blocker. So we've now blocked a primary mechanism to digest food. And we've also blocked her ability to fight off infections, because that's what acid is in her stomach for. Okay, you get the picture. Blood work, so her Lipitor is working, her cholesterol's good. Her vitamin D's 32, which is in a normal range. What's normal range? 30 to 100. So if you're taking a test and the passing grade is 60 to 100, where do you want to be? So I'm not happy with 32. That's just me. Her hemoglobin A1C is 5.9. That's pre-diabetic, so that is, you know, sugar, insulin resistance, and her fasting sugar is high. So really, what am I thinking about this woman? I think she has sugar insulin imbalance as her primary motivating problem. She has intestinal issues, so she has inflammation coming from there. I don't think she's assimilating nutrients well. And her plan, this is what she came in with. By the way, she was already on bioidentical hormones. Bioidentical hormones just mean they're hormone replacement that your body already recognizes. Estradiol, progesterone, this is all what we recognize. She was already on that, and her doctor actually went a step further, giving her vitamin D. I totally agree with that. Vitamin D is important for sugar insulin balance. It's important for hormone balance. It's important for brain and depression prevention. Important for bones. I mean, that was a great idea. Fish oil, general anti-inflammatory, can't go wrong there, I think. Put them on a supplement that was supposed to help with the insulin sensitization. Chromium and cinnamon, you've heard of these supplements, are good for sugar. But again, what are we doing? Band-aid. We're not getting to the underlying problem. And then she's got her probiotics, because that's going to cure everything. What did I do? Okay, when did this start? This started 2 years ago when I went into menopause. What else was going on? Divorce, illness, job stress, children's stress, moved, sickness, trauma, surgery. I go through it, sexual abuse. I go through everything. What was going on? Nothing. I went into menopause. This is her diet. What do you guys think about her diet? What are you thinking? Someone tell me. I heard something over here.
High sugar.
High sugar. This looks pretty healthy, but it's pretty carby, right? It's pretty carby. What else do we notice about this? How often is this woman eating? Correct. Every 2 hours. So let's see what happens. When we eat food, our insulin goes up. So she's eating food and having high insulin all the time. Insulin makes fat. How is she going to lose weight when she is motivating insulin, triggering it every 2 hours? Disrupted sleep. She's having night sweats. She's having hot flashes. She can't sleep. She wakes up in the middle of the night and has a drink. Do you know what she's drinking? She's drinking apple juice. Okay? Movement. She's exercising like an animal. Feels tired after she exercises. Is that a good thing to do? No. She's doing yoga. She's doing meditation. She's doing prayer. She gets the idea. This is a woman who gets it. Yes, this is things I need to do, but it's not helping her yet. Stressors. She's stressed about being fat and tired. Like that's her whole, that was the theme. So this is some blood work that I did. Okay, in addition to what she had. B12. This is, by the way, magic B12, in case anybody just wants something magical. You know, add some B12. Normal is between 200 and 1200. Studies show under 600, you're not good. Your brain does not function well that way. So she's low. Fasting insulin is high. I want that under 5. She's under 22. HSCRP is a measure, it's for cardiovascular inflammation, but I use it as a surrogate measure for inflammation in the body. It's a surrogate for IL-6, which is a cytokine, it's an inflammatory molecule in the body. Above 1 is high. She has some autoimmune markers starting. She's already starting with her autoimmune. A1C, and we saw that. So what do I think is going on? She's hypoglycemic. This is waking her up in the middle of the night. Her 5 mechanisms for bringing up sugar, 2 of them are cortisol and adrenaline. What do you think is happening in the middle of the night? Why is she getting up to drink apple juice? Because she's so hypoglycemic. She's waking up in a sweat because her adrenaline is pumping to try to get her sugar up. This is a woman who eats every 2 hours in the day. How is she going to go 6 hours without waking up? Symptoms of adrenal dysregulation. So have you guys, raise your hands if you've heard of adrenal fatigue. Okay, excellent. Adrenal fatigue does not exist, okay? But it is a very handy way to describe what people feel. She's in adrenal fatigue. I'm gonna just go there and use it. I looked at my four pillars. This is what we're gonna do. You're gonna go on a cardiometabolic program. So that's eating to maximize sugar insulin balance. You are gonna eat 3 times a day. You are going to increase your healthy fats with those meals. You're going to decrease the sugar and processed carbs. We're gonna get you to fast a little bit, so I don't want you to eat for 12 hours between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. We're gonna go through your meals very specifically. I'm gonna tell you what's gonna work for you. Okay, so that's what I talked about with her. Stop doing that exercise. You're overtraining, you're fatiguing yourself, you're killing yourself, you're gonna make yourself worse. We're gonna go with yoga, we're gonna go with Pilates, we're gonna go with walking, we're gonna go with weight training. And if you feel tired doing any of that, you did too much and we're not doing that. Restore, okay. Fixing her sugar is what's gonna fix her sleep. Her hot flashes are not from lack of estrogen and progesterone. Her hot flashes are from her sugar problems. And then we're gonna do some vagal nerve exercises. So remember how we talked about sympathetic? Parasympathetic is the opposite. What are vagal nerve exercises? So we get that through yoga and meditation and acupuncture. We get that through there. But there are also specific exercises you can do, like gargling and singing loudly. And these are all things that stimulate vagus nerve activity. She ended up, by the way, losing weight. She ended up sleeping. It was all about her sugar and insulin. Now let's talk about this patient. This is really interesting. This gets into the stress component. 29-year-old. Stopped birth control pills 2 years ago and then never got another period. She was diagnosed by PCOS by her gynecologist and they wanted her to go on metformin. Again, that's a magical drug, by the way, that really helps for a lot of different things. And they also wanted her to restart birth control pills, but she felt that the birth control pills may have been why she wasn't getting her period. On the evaluation was pretty complete. She had a sonogram that showed appearance of ovaries, like lots of little follicles that look like polycystic ovarian syndrome. And her hormone levels were reportedly normal though, which is a little odd. That's not what you would think with polycystic ovarian syndrome, but that's what they said. So she wants a second opinion of what she can do that's not a birth control pill or metformin, because she tried metformin and it gave her horrible stomach cramps. So I'm looking at her history and what do I see? Tonsils removed. So what does that say to me? Well, it's not her whole body, but specifically, when you have tonsils removed, why do you have them removed? Because you're sick all the time, right? So she had a lot of probably throat infections or sinus infections. So she got a lot of antibiotics. So what kind of gut microbiome, what kind of balance do we have there? Probably not so great, and as a little kid. Anorexia as a teenager, so I'm gonna guess she was a vegetarian because that's very common, or she might have been a dancer, but also just the gut imbalance was probably something that put her on the road to not absorbing things well. She had vitamin deficiencies, and that can also lead to eating disorders. And she had anxiety. Well, if she's not absorbing any B12 or vitamin D or iron or amino acids, then how is her brain gonna function well? She's on a bunch of stuff that we all talked about. Again, treating the symptom, not the underlying cause. I asked her, do you have any other symptoms? Yes, she has some GI symptoms. That wasn't even a concern of hers because she said, well, that's how I've been forever. I've always had bloating and constipation and pain when I eat. Always, so that wasn't even a symptom in her head. She eats pretty well. She's very conscious. She's trying to be healthy. And she said that even though she sleeps 8 hours a night, she's not feeling rested in the morning. She's too tired to do any exercise. And she says she does try to do meditation. She does try to do journaling. You know, she's working on calming things down. So what's my question? When did this start? What was going on? What did she say? She said, I had to drop out of grad school and move home 2 years ago. What happened? Well, my father committed suicide. And my mother is bipolar. She can't live by herself. So I had to come and take care of her. Okay, so I'm already now, okay, PCOS is just not even a thing. That's not even what's happening. This woman had such a severe trauma that her brain, in a subconscious level, is saying, I'm in danger. I'm afraid. I can't have a baby. I can't ovulate. I'm not doing that right now because we're in danger. So this is what's motivating to me. This is, now I've heard this, I know where I'm going. What did she have? She had a whole slew of low vitamins, low D, low B12, low iron. And I checked her for celiac and she was positive. So she has an autoimmune disease that creates inflammation in the gut. So she's got chronic inflammation and she also is not absorbing nutrients and she has an autoimmune disease. Closer look at her hormones, everything was low. Everything was low. The pituitary gland hormones were all low. So what does that mean? Her brain is not stimulating these things to work. Why? Because it's in a fear pattern, right? When we have a condition called hypothalamic hypomenorrhea, which means that there's a brain not stimulating ovarian hormone synthesis, it's because there's something very deep saying, stop, you can't do this right now. She also had abnormal thyroid levels, and she also had antibodies to her thyroid. So this girl was just brewing autoimmune disease. What was my assessment? She has nutrient depletion. I think it's from her celiac disease. I'm gonna send her to get an endoscopy to confirm that. She has Hashimoto's, and she also has low thyroid. Low thyroid, by the way, in and of itself, will give you no period, and will give you the appearance of polycystic ovaries. So my diagnosis is this is a primary brain problem. So what did I do? I took her off of gluten and dairy. Why dairy? Because casein, the protein in milk, crosses over with gluten. So we're going to get rid of that. I'm going to give her some vitamin D and B12 shots. And I'm going to give her some digestive enzymes that digest gluten and dairy in case she gets exposed to something accidentally. When you have celiac, that is more than just, I get bloated. That's serious. Like, you're really damaging your lining. So she has to avoid it at all costs. I gave her some magnesium to help with sleep. So to finish up her story, I hooked her up with therapy and some social work to help her with her home situation. I started her on CBD, a little bit of cannabidiol, and then DNRS therapy, dynamic neural retraining system. That's what was going to get her brain to unlock. And that was going to get her to understand she didn't have to be afraid. Started her on some thyroid replacement, low-dose naltrexone, which is something for autoimmune disease control. Anyway, 5 months later, she started getting a period. Here's the last case. 40-year-old migraines, dizziness. This is a physician. Migraines with aura, so neurologic symptoms associated with the headaches, progressing to dizziness and vertigo, getting worse, tired. History of an ovarian cyst removal on birth control pills and antibiotics for a year for acne. Went to the neurologist, went to the ENT, all exams normal, blood panels for blood clotting issues normal, autoimmune stuff normal, MRI of the head normal, blood vessel flow to the head normal, tilt table test normal. You're okay, you're just crazy. Was told that wine is a trigger, so, you know, stop that. Let's start Imitrex. When you get a headache, take Imitrex. It's a migraine medication, works great. Will give you some chest palpitations like you want to die, but it's okay. Zofran for when you start vomiting from the migraine. That will constipate you for a week. Wow. Furoset, so that's a pain reliever. It's wonderful. It's got Tylenol and aspirin and butalbital. Nice. And then we have a daily calcium channel blocker for prevention. So that's a high blood pressure medication, but you can use it in lower doses to try to prevent migraines. So this chick had a reaction to everything. Sounds familiar. This is her diet, which is pretty good, except for when she's on call at the hospital. Then there's a bounty of bagels and crackers and granola bars and all kinds of stuff right there in the doctor's lounge. She noticed that on days on call, the migraines were particularly horrible. What's her sleep like? What's her restoration? Well, on call, she's not sleeping. But when she's at home, she has horrible sleep for 6 hours. Because how are you supposed to actually develop a sleep pattern when every fourth night you're up all night? Movement's pretty good. Feels good, does a, you know, wide variety of exercise. and occasional yoga, not as much as she should be doing for relaxation, but her biggest stress is her work, it's being on call. So at that time, I did an extensive blood panel, and all I found was low vitamin D. Now, vitamin D is one of my favorite supplements, but it's not gonna fix that, okay? What did we do? 9 food elimination diet. Let's see what happens when you eliminate the 9 biggest triggers for food intolerances. You just need to do it for 3 weeks. And those are the foods. Let's stop your birth control pill and the antibiotics. And maybe let's switch you over to some things that are natural anti-inflammatories and help calm the brain. Helps to reduce neural excitatory behavior. That's magnesium. And that's some B-complex vitamins. So movement, let's try to move to something a little more restorative. How about a little more Pilates? How about a little bit of yoga? How about a little bit of acupuncture? And then try to go to bed earlier. You know what? When you try to go to bed after 11, you get a second wind. That's your cortisol kicking in again. You're not gonna sleep. So let's not let the second wind kick in. Let's try to go to bed a little earlier. And maybe look for another job. Like, just a thought. Migraines got better, acne was better, eggs and gluten were her triggers, felt less mental fatigue because she was sleeping better, didn't need to take as many migraine medications, and she had the guts to open up her own private practice doing Redefining Health Medical. So that's what happened. So, thank you guys. That was I'm glad you humored me. I love going through these cases. I think it gives you a sense of, you know, what we're looking at. And if anybody has any questions or comments about anything related or unrelated, happy to answer.